accession number 18669, Reel 2.
Don Summerfield, Reel 2. So you were just telling me about on this first occasion when you counterattacked to help another British regiment.
Yeah.
If you can tell me what you remember about that, please.
Well, all I remember that, you know, we was woken and we retook the position and we stopped up there for several weeks to maintain it. And I think, I don't know, I went on a sniper's course. I was a sniper. Is that all right to say?
Yes.
I was a sniper. And I think it was, before that, I went on a sniper's course with the Americans, actually. And I went to, of course, I carried on with duties. And then my first duty was on the Yook when we took that position as a sniper. Because we, I was trained with the telescopic see-through sights. Mm.
Had you been a sniper before you went on this course?
No. I believe it's because I was top in the past. I was top for I don't think I was marksman, but I was top in the exercise firing, you know, in the past in the training. So I was sent for a sniper's course, and I also done a stretchers bearers course when we was in rest.
But it was the Americans who trained you how to be a sniper.
Snipers, yeah. I went to the we went to the Americans.
How many days were you with them?
Oh, not many days. It wasn't long. It was at night time. We went for learning to fire this new telescopic see-through telescopic rifle they had. It was. I don't think it'd been out long actually. This invention.
Was it?
I think we could see about 30 to 40 yards, or 50 at the most, in the dark. So that's what I was taught.
What kind of a rifle was this?
American repeater. Because we never had a repeater rifle then. We had these 303s.
So you had a different rifle from the rest of the
company? Only when I was doing the duty of a sniper. At nights.
What did you think to the instruction that the Americans gave you?
Good. That was very good. I learned it quick because I enjoyed, funny enough, I enjoyed firing. I'd never done that till I went in the army, and it just, I seemed to come up out on top in training, and I think it went from there.
What advice did the Americans give you about being a sniper?
Well, you know, they told you how to sort of make yourself I can't put it in, it's hard to say.
Inconspicuous.
Yeah. To anything and ways and means to do this and mostly they was concerned about is firing this, making sure you knew how to fire this rifle and how it worked and and you could use it and you fired it and that was it. You know.
Did it operate much differently from a 303?
A little bit. It was a repeater, which was good, and it was more. It was smaller than a 303, because 303 rifles quite long, aren't they? Weren't they? But I coped with it all right. I was only called on to use it at certain times when I was back in the line. actually meant it was for my mind gaps.
So
guarding mind gaps, as you know what I mean. We used to have minefields and the mind gaps where you go out and you come back, or the enemy could come in.
So when you say a repeater, you mean you didn't have to operate the bowls to?
No. You could fire it single. You turn it to single and then turn it to automatic. And I forget how the magazine, how many it held. It held quite a few, I think, bullets. Whereas the old 303, I think, only used to hold five, if I can remember. Five. I'm sure it did. Yes. In America, about 15, I think, in that repeater. There's quite a lot of difference. 10 or 15.
And when you went out to do sniper work, did you have special camouflage outfit?
Yeah. You didn't actually... my job, when I did... I didn't do it all the time. It was only occasions when you... you had to watch the mine gaps, where enemy could penetrate into your position, if you understand what I mean.
And did they try to penetrate the
position? There was times.
And were you successful in hitting
enemy? Yes, yes.
At what kind of range?
40 to 50 yards.
And would you just fire one shot and then stop?
Well, it all depends how many was concerned. if it only meant one shot, it would be. But if it meant more, I had to do more. It all depends about how many of the enemy there were around, if you understand what I mean.
And after you'd fired one shot, would they be able to see from a flash or something where you were?
The enemy?
Yes.
Well, from the sound, I should imagine. But I think I'd be in a trench anyhow, or I'd be in a foxhole. I was quite safe as far as I was concerned. But there'd be a few of her chaps around as well, you know. You had a good backing. I wasn't on my own, sort of thing, you know. But at the time, I didn't feel it was a duty, and I had to do it, and that was it.
So you never went out by yourself as a sniper?
Not in no man's land, not on my own, no. It was only from her positions. But with in a position on my own, but with our boys was close by, sort of thing. But other than that, I didn't. I never went out on my own. Only in training.
Where did you aim at the enemy?
Pardon?
Which part of the body did you aim at?
I can't say. I can't. You can't just say. I just. You don't. You don't know. You just aim at a person or whoever it is, and that's it. You just don't know who you hit them.
Did you like this weapon that the Americans supplied you with for sniping?
Yes, I did. Yes. Yes. Because as time went on, as you know, that the British Army had a automatic rifle in the end, didn't they? They have now, haven't they? I don't know. I've never had this rifle, used it or seen it, but I know they've got an automatic now. I think it was similar to the one that I had then from the Americans.
So, were you just ordered to be a sniper, or did you volunteer to be a sniper?
No, I was asked. I didn't volunteer, I was asked. And I was just asked if I would go, or told, that I was going to go on a sniper's course, which wasn't long, and it was at a night time, and it was, we was in rest at the time, and I was taken to an American base, and well, not me, a few of us, and we was taught how to fire this rifle and what it was all about. And that was it.
And the Americans also trained you to be a stretcher bearer?
No. Our medical corps. That was when we was in rest. And I was a jack of all trades. I'd done a bit of stretcher bearing and patching up some boys when I was in the line as well. I was a platoon sort of medical come rifleman sort of thing. So
you mean you were trained in first aid?
Yes. As much as to, I was trained in first aid when we had been trained as a stretcher bearer, as trained how to dress a wound and things like that, which I had to do, and I done as best as my ability.
How do you dress a wound?
All depends how big the wound is. If it's a big wound, as big as pad you've got, the main thing is to stop the bleeding. So what, as far as I can remember, bang onto the pad and as tight as possible, and then the patient gets to away from the line as quick as to the medical corps as quick as possible. See, the medical corps was behind the lines, and as soon as there was a casualty, they come up to take the casualties away. So one of my jobs as a stretcher bearer, If in my platoon, if any of the boys got it, I would dress that wound as best I could to my ability, and the medical corps would be there as quick as possible to take them away to hospital.
How did the dressing stick on?
Well, you tie them on. It's a big pad. There used to be pads, sized pads, big pads, small pads. And bandages, and the pad used to go on the wound and tied as tight as possible.
With bandages?
Yes, with bandage on the pad, and then if you need a bandage over that to keep it tighter, you do. As long as that you could, your main aim was to put that pad to stop
hemorrhage.
Bleeding, and to kill any germs, you cover that wound over and tie it as tight as you can. And your main aim is to stop that wound from bleeding and keeping it clean, which I did to my ability, and which I had to do quite a few times.
So there was a danger of them bleeding to death, obviously?
Yes. Oh, yes. Especially if you can't get them out, it's very quick. Or if there's anybody on a patrol, which there was a case once, we didn't lose him. I don't think we lost him. I don't know, but he was on a patrol, and I had to go out and get him, had to dress him to stop the, because he was wounded, and it was getting him back to our. Trenches and to safety. It was all about. A stretcher bearer to the platoon.
So two stretcher bearers would obviously have to go out.
Only me. but I'd have to take someone with me. If there was a case where anybody got wounded on a patrol and they couldn't get them back. If they was wounded that bad, somebody had to go out, which would be the stretcher bearer of the platoon, dress the wound and get them back take a stretcher out and get them back into the positions to get away. You'd have to have somebody with you or somebody from the patrol to help with the other end of the stretcher.
Would they have to be tied onto the stretcher?
If you had time or you had the material to tie them on, but that wasn't always the case. It was just a matter of quickness, being fast and quick to get them to safety and to hospital as quick as possible, or to a better treatment. because you couldn't give them the treatment they could get back with the medical corps. All you could do is try to stop that, to keep that wound clean and stop that bleeding. That was the main aim of a stretcher bearer, and that's all you could do.
Would you have Red Cross armbands or
no? No, I can't remember. I might have done. I can't remember if I had one or not.
Would the enemy fire on stretcher bearers?
I expect they would, and you don't know. You see. You just don't know. Just can't tell.
Would you have fired on an enemy stretcher bearer?
No. But then again, we're saying things like that. I can go back to, it was Christmas. I'm going back for what I'm talking about now. When it was Christmas time, and we was on an ambush patrol. Christmas Eve. That was 1952, Christmas. And as luck happened, it was very cold, and as luck happened, nothing happened. The all what happened, everybody nearly froze to death, really. If we'd have stopped out there any longer, we'd have froze. But what we done, when it was time to return to our positions, this was in no man's land. This was in no man's land, and I don't think it. This is my opinion. It's not nobody else's. I don't think the enemy wanted to do any have any action that night, because we never met any enemy. And when we went back to our position, we went back in another direction, and as we went up the hill to our position, we found Christmas cards, which the enemy had left. So they was in one position and we was in the other. So that's why I don't think they wanted to have any action on that Christmas. And I'll never forget that. As we come up the hill, there was all these Christmas cards tied onto trees.
What did they say?
I can't remember. I'm sorry. It just said Happy Christmas and go home, Tommy, and things like that. Because that's all they could, all they could keep on to us about. Go home, Tommy. That's all we got thrown at us, and I think that's what was most of the Christmas cards.
What did you feel about getting a Christmas card from the Chinese?
Well, at the time, we were so relieved to get back, and it was quite funny to think that we'd been out at one end of the area, waiting for them, and they'd come down the other end and put Christmas cards on the trees, knowing that it was an entrance to our positions. Funny enough, because there was minefields, around. So that was our position that we had to go up, and that was a position that we found these Christmas cards. And it seemed quite funny that they knew where we went.
Any other incidents you can remember going out on patrol?
Well, there was that one. I'll go back to the one where the chap was. That stands out in my mind. I went. There was two. Oh, there's several. But this one in particular, we went out on a ridge where the enemy was. Visiting, I can't think of any other words, but every night, and was bumping with our patrols, and we went out to lay an ambush on that patrol, and I went out that night, and I had to go out. It wasn't my officer, it was another officer from another platoon. We went out on this, but I had to go out with all with all my my kit, plus a medical bag, plus my rifle, etc. And they got me carrying a wireless set this night, and we was on the left hand ridge, laid this ambush, and I had to take a stretcher as well. So imagine me with a stretcher and all this wireless kit, stretcher, and everything. Anyhow, so I had to keep close to the officer because I had the wireless set. So when what happened, we laid the ambush, and of course it wasn't so cold then. It was, we passed the winter, it was coming into spring a bit then, and once the bad lay in there, and you know, he didn't freeze, and what happened, the enemy come up on the other ridge, and they bumped the standard patrol, which was consisted of only four men. We had probably about 18 to 20 men on this ridge. Might be more, but I don't think it was many more. And on the other ridge, where they hadn't been coming up, they come up that night, and they struck a standing patrol, which where they wounded this one of our boys, and I got the call. I had to go in to go out to dress this man's wound. And it was a little bit, how can I put it, a bit of flapping going on, if you know what I mean. The officer didn't know whether to let me go. Is it all right to say this?
Yes.
He didn't know whether to let me go in or what, because no one could go out and dress it. I had the bag of dressings and everything with me. But whether there was some in the officer's bunker, I don't know. But this, I said that I had to go in. The officer didn't want me to go in, you know, back to the position, because it was quite a way. So I suggested that if I took somebody with me to help protect me, because, you know, being on my own, I had this stretcher, and well, we agreed to that in the end, and I went back to the position, which we weren't very comfortable doing, but we done it. But you had to do it, and that was it. You was at war, and that was it. It was your job. And I had to go out on the other ridge to bring this boy in, to dress his wound and bring him in. And the time we got him in, the medical corps had arrived to take him back to safety.
Where had he been wounded?
In the fire. Just a very awkward position. Very awkward it was. Very, very awkward.
Did he survive?
Very nice. Pardon?
Did he survive?
I don't know. I really don't know. And all I hope he did. Because you never heard from anybody after they'd. There's only one chap who'd come back, and he probably saved my life. Wasn't in that position. I don't think that was in. There were so many different ills when you go back. And you come back up the line, you used to have the York 355, 245, 222s, they was all numbered and named positions. They was all ills, and those are positions you went back to and relieved other units or other armies from other countries. All depends who was in that position. But we was in this forward position. I think this was a dangerous position, and I was helping this chap doing I think it called it the 202 mortar. It was a small mortar, which was used by the infantry. It wasn't the artillery mortar. It was a small mortar. It did fire bombs, but mostly made for flares, and for when you were being attacked or when you was out in you know, you wanted to see it in no man's land. And anyhow, we always had maintained that we had this two-inch mortar in the platoon, and me and my comrade, we was preparing. We stand down at the time. We're standing down, and we was preparing the mortars and that for the previous evening, ready for the next night, so that you're not messing about in the dark. And we was up on the ledge from the trenches, from the trench, and in this mortar pit, little pit, and we just finishing. Getting the mortar bombs ready and that for the previous night, and we started getting shelled, and as being unlucky, one come down and one was coming down, and I can remember this, and we both, and it went straight in the mortar where the mortar pit. What we used to call it, where we were, but we dived in the trench. We both dived in the trench, but my comrade pushed me in front of him. He must have done, because if he hadn't have done, I would have got the same as what he got. He pushed me, and we went head first into the trench. All I got was a bump on my head because I had my helmet on, and he got shrapnel all on. On his legs. So by the time we both landed, he landed on top of me. So he saved my life, really. He saved me from getting wounded. But on recovering that, it must have been nerves. He jumped up, and because I was dazed, he jumped up and he sort of went up and down the trench. It was his nerves, and now I got hold of him, and I took him into the officer's bunker and dressed his legs, which was full of shrapnel, and he was taken off back to hospital, and he did come back, but I never saw him until we got out the line. He did come back, because how I knew, when we was in another position, that I think that was on 355, and 355 was the biggest deal, I think, in Korea. And I was on the outpost in the daytime, and I got a call from the company commander's headquarters, because you had a report any movement, and I had to call the company commander's. And I can't remember his name. He answered the phone or the wireless, whatever we used, and it had his legs sorted out, and he'd come back, but they put him in.